Parshas Vayeshev, we're going to deal with the part of the butler and the baker. It says in Perek Mem Pasuk Aleph. Now listen to the wording over here, because it's careful wording. Chatu mashke melametzayim va'ope. So the butler and the baker, in other words, the mashke, the person who gave the drinks to the king of Mitzrayim, as well as the baker, ladonim, they sinned to their master, lamelech Mitzrayim, to the king of Mitzrayim. So number one, the first word you want to point out is chatu. Okay, that's that. Then it says vayiktzov paro. God got Paro got angry on his two officers, on the Sara Mashkim and on the Sara Open. Paro got angry at them. So number one, Chatu, they sinned. Number two, Paro got angry with them. Okay, so the Pasuk specifically goes out and puts them in different psukim to say that they're different from one another, and we have to understand exactly what it was. Now, what did they do? What did they do wrong? So we all know Rashi, and everybody knows what Rashi says over here, that the problem was Zenim to Zvub, the Pili Potirin Shalo. One guy, right, the butler, thought there was a fly that was in his cup, that was in the cup of Paro. So when Paro took his drink, he saw there was a fly in there. That was something that he got in trouble for. But then into Tzror, but Gluskin Shalo. The other one, there was a rock in the baked food that he was giving to Paro. So we all know that one, the fly in the drink and the rock in the food, and that's what ended up happening. Now, the Seder Adoro says that the whole cup was filled with flies, that he gave him the drink, and there were tons of flies inside. And the reason why the Seder Adoro says that, why the Midrash brings that down, is because the sins are not equal. A fly falling into your drink is not as crazy as a stone inside bread. I mean, the fact is, yes, they have to sift grain through back then, so it was possible that a rock would find its way into the flour. That's definitely possible.
Bread wasn't regular pita, it was probably what's so fine one that Sarah did, like multiple
Kemach or Solas. So probably what? I mean, it was the king, right? So it's possible that a rock will get in there, but that's a little crazy. You don't allow a rock in the middle of your bread, but a fly in the drink, what are you supposed to do? So the Seder Adoro says it was because it was full of flies. He had a drink, he looked at it, literally there was a huge mound of flies on top of the drink, which is why that person was just as responsible for the baker itself. But it's clear that Rashi is differentiated between them because he knows at the end of the day the butler is going to live, the baker is going to die. So he says the baker is going to die because he did something crazy, the butler is going to live because he didn't do something crazy, and that's the pshat. However, it seems like the Pasuk is equating them. And if the Pasuk is equating them, that doesn't seem to be the chait over here. That's why Yonasim ben Uziel, Targum Yonasim ben Uziel, gives a different pshat. People don't know this one. They got together and they decided to put poison in Paro's food and Paro's drink. They poisoned Paro's food and drink in order to kill their master. Paro found out about the plan for his life. Some say it was from Gabriel, who wanted them to be in the jail together with Yosef HaTzadik. Threw them in jail to find out who was planning what and how. The butler, who was in charge of all the drinks, and the baker, who was in charge of all the foods, because both of them were poisoned, he threw them both in. He tortured them daily, says the Midrash Sichel Tov, tortured them daily until they were supposed to, until they would be killed. The miracle was at the end, that the baker was the only one blamed for the poison. That they blamed the baker for the poison. They said the butler didn't know about it whatsoever. And that's the way that butler was able to get out of his death. And we say it was because of the dreams that were translated by Yosef. He was able to get one out of death. Now, that's not it. If you think those are the only two answers as to what was going on over here, you're totally missing the boat. There are six other midrashim that deal with this issue and tell us what was going on at this time. Two of them regarding the butler, two of them regarding the baker, and two of them regarding both of them together. So here's another couple things. Okay, so it goes like this. Number one, he burned the king's food, which is not so bad, but he burned the king's food. He served it without salt. Number two. Number three, the drinks were made in the wrong vessels. Instead of the king's vessels, they used other vessels for it. Number four, he did not wash his hands before serving Paro his drinks, and his hands were disgusting. Number five and number six deal with them. They both put a small knife in the front of their shoe, then they went to greet Paro. They were going to stab him with their shoes. I remember that from somewhere. I'm sorry, it's got to be from a TV show or something. What? James Bond? Is that what it is? He had a little knife in his shoe in the front of his shoe.
Will Smith.
Will Smith.
A lot of people.
I don't know. Okay, so it's got to be around. They got it from him. These guys had knives in their shoes in order to stab Paro with their shoe. And number six is the best one. They made a contraption which was supposed to choke Paro in his sleep, in which they would be able to lower it down from on top of his bed, put his neck in a stranglehold, and then to be able to kill him in the middle of the night. It could be there's no argument that they did all of this. They put knives in their shoe, and they tried poisoning him, and they tried putting it out. It doesn't say why they were so upset at Paro, but it seems that all these midrashim somewhat are complementing one another. There doesn't seem to be an argument over here.
But what about the flies in the cup? You're saying that it was full of flies. Fly the food into the oil.
No. Clearly, he allowed flies to be inside the cup.
But is severe, or maybe more severe than the rock in the.
As severe. Remember, a rock in the bread can literally kill you.
Cup, and you see it's like covered in flies.
That's true. I mean, everybody knows about schlissel. You know, when you put the key inside the bread, inside the challah. So one time we couldn't find the key. So I still have a chance it's possible that it went into one of my kids' stomachs. We don't have a key to our front door. So we have no idea what happened to it. It's around somewhere. Why my wife used the only key to our front door and put it in the bread? That's a kasha. That's a kasha that really has no tariffs. There's nothing I can do about that. We did end up getting another key for it. But that's a good question. I just don't have another. Okay, Bereishis Rabba, Peiches, brings up a tremendous answer. Tremendous answer. They both wanted to be together with the daughter of Paro. They both wanted to be together, and they were both seducing her, convincing her to marry them. Paro was not okay with the shidduch, did not like either one of them, the butler and the baker. And here's what happened. It could be that they both actually sinned with the daughter of Paro. And that's from the word chatu. The word chatu is that they sinned. Gzeira shava chatu, and by chait, it mentions elsewhere, is referring to Gili Arias, and that they were together with it. Now the truth is, it's not a theory what Rashi wrote. It could be that both of them go together. Paro wanted to squash all the rumors of the National Enquirer and the New York Post that were going around about his daughter and the butler and the baker. He wanted to squash all those rumors. So he took them both and he threw them in jail and gave other reasons for why he threw them in jail. He told everyone that the reason why he threw them in jail is because the butler had a fly in his drink. The baker put a rock in his bread. So it could be that he made those as excuses and told people about that. Well, the real reason he wanted to hide from everyone was because he couldn't stand either one of them because they had been together with his daughter. And that's the reason why this had all happened. So now when everybody asks, right, that's going to happen. Now, it had to be that he would let one of them live and the other one die. Because if he let both of them die, then the rumors would come right back. You know why he let both of them die? I mean, what was so bad about this stuff? Answer is because they for sure sinned with his daughter. They for sure sinned with his daughter, and it must be true, and he's covering it all up. So what did he want to do? He wanted to let one live and one die. Then nobody would say that. They would say, well, if they really sinned with his daughter, then why would he let one of them live? Why would he let one of them serve him still? Must be that they both really did have, I don't know, some other problem of flies in the drink or what's it called, a rock inside. So he told everyone what their sin was while harboring in his mind another reason. That's the two psukim. Chatu is that they sinned with that Gzeirah Shavah. Thus, by Yikso Paro Shnei Tzarisav, he showed anger on his two officers, saying, you did this and you did that, so that he would cover up the real sin of what they had done. The Ben Ishchai says, this is why, at the end of the parsha, we all know what happens. The butler refuses to go to Paro. It says, "V'lozokar saramashkim et Yosef v'ishkacheyu." He did not remember Yosef and he forgot him. And then, Paro has the dreams, as we all know. And then finally, after 2 years, the butler goes up to Paro and he says, oh, I just remembered there was this crazy kid who translated dreams. You should go to him. What, was he that kafui tova that he said, like, I'm not going to go to Paro and help out the guy who helped out me when I was in jail? The guy who gave me a good translation? I mean, he even waited, says the Medrash, he waited until Paro was dying. Paro was on his deathbed, literally dying on his deathbed, when the butler came up to him and said, I remember there's a kid in jail. He waited up until that moment. And then the first words, does anybody know the famous words that the butler says when he starts off his statement of there's a kid in jail? He says, Eschatoai animiskira yom. My sins I am mentioning today in front of Paro. What was so bad? I mean, granted, he put a fly in his drink. I understand that. But what was so bad about the sin? Says the Ben Ishchai, Eschatoai animiskira yom is an unbelievable pshat. Says the following. If Paro remembers that I was in jail, he's going to remember the real reason why. He knows that the only reason why he took me out is because he faked it so that both of them wouldn't be killed, so the rumors were squashed. But if I bring it up to Paro, do you remember when I was in jail? Paro will be like, you went to jail because you were together with my daughter. He's immediately going to remember it, and he's immediately going to get angry at the butler and possibly kill him. That's not going to help Yosef. And then what was Yosef thrown in jail for? For being together with Achish Potiphar. That's what he was thrown in jail for. Oh, so another reminder of what you did with my daughter. So both those things would come up. So the butler didn't want to say anything to Paro. He purposely, Vayishkacheyu, he purposely forgot about it. He wouldn't let himself remember it because he knew that if he remembered and he would talk to Paro about the dream translator in the jail, Paro would say, "Why? That's right, that's why you were in jail." He'd get angry at me and possibly kill me. So he wouldn't say anything until he knew that the coast was absolutely clear and that Paro would not kill him. He waited to be able to say it at the right moment, at the right time. So Velo Zachar Asar Mashkin was on purpose. He purposely waited. Only 2 years later, when Paro was sitting there on his deathbed, and he knew he would do anything, and he would forget anything else that was out there, make sure that he would not remember, or something like that, meaning he wouldn't really care about his daughter at that time, because he's literally dying. Only at that moment was he ready to go up. And that's why he says, "Eschatu ayin emezkir hayom." I wouldn't mention my sins before this day, because you'd kill me. But today, when you're dying, and you need a dream translator, today, I'm going to tell you what I did wrong. I'm going to remind you that I was together with your daughter, but it's worth it because now you know what you can do. You can get a translator for your dream. Now you can get Yosef. That's how the Ben Yishai translates. That's how he figures out this whole thing. Now, we have to know a little bit about dreams in order to get into the dreams that they had. Medrash HaGadol says, a person only dreams things that he's used to doing or seeing in his lifetime. And the Medrash says, and it's really Gemara Brachos, no one has ever dreamed about an elephant going through the eye of a needle. The purpose behind them, the reason why it says it that way, is because we don't dream impossible things. Now, we could dream about us flying, and who hasn't dreamt about you flying? You could dream about seeing things that you might have imagined during your day, but you never dream about things that you did not think about, that you wouldn't think about, that you don't have in your head, that you wouldn't even imagine. It doesn't happen. There's no such thing as a brand new thing that you couldn't imagine in your dream. The funny thing is, the only time that does happen is when it's a bit of nevuah. The example is Daniel. Daniel saw a creature that he had never seen before in his dream, and that's how we know that it was a bit of prophecy. It was something that he saw, a prophetic vision, because you wouldn't normally see that in your dream. You wouldn't normally see that in your dream. Things that are absolutely impossible. That means that there's something you'll see, but the hidden meanings are behind those things. The way to understand a dream is to be able to look behind the scenes. Yes, it's showing you walking around, but what is the reason for you walking around? It's not about you doing the things you normally do. Like if I would see myself in Skokie Yeshiva, but I would have a banana in my hands. It's not about me walking in Skokie Yeshiva. It's not all prophecy. When I walk around Skokie Yeshiva, I'm going to be holding a banana. That's not it. If there's something to do with why I'm holding that banana more than anything else. And that you have to understand. What does the banana represent? What is this? What is that? That's the idea of what each thing is, and that's that. Rav Wolfson points out that we also have to remember that whenever a pasuk is telling us a dream, there's an idea that that dream was not only referring to that time. It applies to us even now. There's a translation that we can use for this dream of the baker and the butler even today. Even for right now. Because otherwise, it wouldn't be in there. It would just say, they dreamt, Yosef translated it, and he got them out of jail. He told the butler, you're going to leave. He told the baker, you're going to die. That's all it would do. But if it says the dream, then there obviously is a meaning behind it. As a side note, my brother asked me earlier today, Chaim, he texted me and said, why do we have the dreams at the beginning of the Parsha, Vayeshev, Yosef's dreams about him, all the shvatim bowing down to him, if it never really happened exactly that way, and it was sort of different than how he depicted it in the dreams itself? And I said, the dreams were true for that time, but they also apply to us as well. The idea behind the first dream was when there is grain, all of the grain of the world is brought to the world from one tzaddik. A tzaddik davens, and the parnasa can come all because of that tzaddik. And that's the big thing of grain in the middle, that's Yosef, the tzaddik, standing in the middle while all the other grain is bowing down to him. That food comes to the world because of that one grain, that tzaddik who's right there in the middle of the world. That's number one dream. Second dream was the sun, moon, and stars that all bowed down to Yosef, a tzaddik. Sun, moon, and stars. This one, Yosef was not a sheaf of grain in the middle. It was Yosef himself on the ground, and the sun and the moon and the stars bowed down to him. That's a reference to Yaakov, you know, bowing down to Yosef, right? And that Yaakov and the Shvatim are going to bow down to Yosef. They all ask, but who's the moon? Rachel Imenu is dead. They say, oh, it's referring to Bilhah. Bilhah might have also been dead. It doesn't say anywhere that Bilhah bowed down to Yosef, so how do we understand that? And the answer is, that's not what the dream really meant. the dream really meant that even when Yosef HaTzadik is on the ground, all of the heavens will come down and bow down to him. Tell me guys, how does a round object bow? You ever tried to see that? How do you have a sun bow? What does it do? Does it fold in half? There's no way. A sun cannot bow, but it sets. The only way for it to do is to set. What Yosef was seeing in his dream is that when he needs help, if he's on the ground and he has problems, at that moment, the sun, the moon, the stars, everyone will come to help him. That if I'm having a problem, everyone is willing to come and help me. The heavens above will come and help me. To that, Yaakov said, no way. There's no way that will happen. Number one, you'll never be on that low of a level. Number two, there's no way I'm going to come to a person who's on that low of a level. But that happened, didn't it? Yosef HaTzadik had it really bad with Eishes Potiphar. And he needed something right at that moment. And what happened to him at that moment? The image of his father came to him right at that moment. When he needed it the most, and he was down in the dumps and on the ground, at that moment the sun bowed down to him. The sun came to him. He didn't go up to the sun came to him. And that goes by every person. That's what Hanukkah is, right? That you can see the light and everything comes out. I don't want to be all, you know, special and commercially. But that's the idea of what Hanukkah is, that the light goes to every single person. See, I connect everything. Even the Parsha, the Hanukkah. But that's the idea. These were very lofty dreams. Who the butler and the baker were, and why they were allowed to have dreams that applied so far in advance, I have absolutely no idea. But here's what we're referring to. Number one, the greatest thing in this Parsha is something that no one knows. Why do we have four cups on Pesach? Why do we drink four cups of wine? Vote say, Zivitel, Zivigol, Zivilakakti, right? You know the Medrash brings down another answer? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer, because it says the word kos four times by the Sar HaMashkim. You know that? Nobody ever knows that one. There's another shot. It's the Sar HaMashkim. It says the word kos four times. So let's look at it. It says, the kos paro biyadi, the cup of paro is in my hands. And I took the grapes and I squeezed them into the cup of paro. The etin is a kos al kap paro. And then I gave the cup to the hands of paro. That's three. And then Yosef translated the dream and says, he says, v'asata kos paro biyado. You're going to put the cup of paro in your hands. Four times the word kos. Four kosos on Pesach. That's where we learn it from. We learn it from the Sar HaMashkim. From nowhere else. We learn it straight from him. That's what we learned up learning out. Yerushalmi Psachim Perek Yud Halacha He. Now Rashi in Psachim says that it's really three cups, because only three cups are in the actual dream. He says there are only three cups on Pesach. The fourth cup is Birchas HaMazon, which by benching we're going to have a cup of wine anyway. So we have three cups for Pesach and a fourth cup for benching, because it only says the word kos three times altogether. Everyone asks on Rashi, why did he argue with Yerushalmi? Yerushalmi says straight out it's four cups from the four times it says it there. Rabbi Tarfon says, because you have a problem. There's a fifth time that it says the word kos over here. The fifth kos is at the very, very end, by Yosef and Sar HaMashkim Ashkeyu, they brought the butler back to his position, by Yitin HaKos El Kap Paro. He put the cup into the hands of Paro. There's a fifth cup.
Well, that's okay, right?
Yeah.
So it's basically the Gospel of Lakakti, and some say there's also the Heivesi. There's that fifth cup. Rabbi Tarfon held, and in Surah, the Yeshiva in Surah, this is what they used to do. They drank five cups of wine. And the fifth cup of wine was the Kos Shel Eliyahu. It's a big machlokus what to do with the Kos Shel Eliyahu. What do you do afterward? What do you guys do with the Kos Shel Eliyahu? A lot of people don't even know. You pour it back, right? Yeah, you give it to a kid. You go around. I'm sorry?
Use it for the next morning.
You use it for Kiddush the next morning. That's a famous one. You use it for a mitzvah the next morning.
Where'd
you get around? I'm sorry?
You find it on
Sukkot
when you go outside and you're like...
You find it on Sukkot, right. Yeah, you give it out to Eliyahu and you pour it on the ground, you see what ends up happening, right? It's supposed to be drunk. There was a fifth cup drunk by everyone in Surah. That's Rabbi Tarfon's Shita. He learns out about five times that it says coast in this week's Parsha. Five times. That's where he learns it from. He gets it from over here. It's a crazy shot, but that's the reason why. So what's the connection? Why in the world are we connecting four cups of wine on Pesach to the butler's dream? What is that connection? Says the Kli Yakar. Unbelievable shot. Drinking a cup of wine is like a reference to salvation from certain tzaros. Meaning on Pesach we're told to drink wine as a toast to the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and what he's done for us by taking us out of Mitzrayim. Baba Basra, Ches Amud Beis, says that there are four major punishments that could happen to a person. There's the sword, meaning war, warfare, and that type of stuff. Rav, which is hunger. Hunger, that could happen to a person. There's also altogether something like that. What else do we have? There is plague, gather, where a plague could go all the way out. And then there's shvi, being captured, being taken, and thrown into jail. Says the Gemara, shvi, jail, is worse than all of them combined. All of them, because in shvi you have all of them. You can starve, you can have plagues, in other words, you could be plagued, you could be hit, as well as the fact that you, obviously, you have warfare. The guy can use anything he wants on you. When you're in jail, nobody's going to care. All four tsaros were involved over there, which is why, when a person leaves captivity, there was always a minhag, says the Kli Yakar, for you to drink four cups of wine. Four cups of wine is in, I was saved, and you're happy, and you're trying to, you're saying, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for taking me out of jail. Four cups of wine for the four different things that would happen. That's the four cups of freedom. That's why we use it on Pesach night. Since we're in captivity in Egypt, we're coming out from captivity, we drink four cups of wine. And that's why it was shown to the butler. That's how Yosef knew he was going to be freed. When he saw the cups of wine in his dream, Yosef said to him, that means you're going to be free, because you saw four cups of wine. The baker did not have cups of wine. He had the bread taken away from him. So he said to the baker, you're going to be killed. There's no choice over here. You are going to be destroyed. That's the idea, says the Kli Yakar. The Ksam Sofer says, we drink and we have praises on Pesach to remind us of the greatness of the dream of the Sar Hashkin. That's what we're doing on Pesach. And we minimize our intake of bread and matzah, obviously bread, but even matzah on Pesach, we don't eat that much. We don't eat that much. And the reason why is to remind us of the evil of the Sar Ha'ofim, of the baker. Amazing, isn't it? That it's all about the baker and the butler was all about what we're going to do on Pesach in future years. I'm sorry?
Is it better not to hold by Gibros?
Gibros, yeah, I'm not even going to deal with that right now. Yosef translated these dreams himself after hearing what's going on. He realized the butler was saying good news, so he translated good news. The baker was saying bad news, so he told him bad news. So what were these dreams? What were the dreams exactly? Here's what Yonas Menuziel says. Okay, there are so many midrashim. Literally, I found 8 midrashim that deal with what these dreams are really talking about. But Yonas Menuziel says the following. The butler's dream had 3 branches with clusters on them, which are the 3 avos, whose children were told they would have to be in Golos Mitzrayim, and they would be avodim and serve in Mitzrayim. They would serve mortar, mud, bricks. They'd be attached to the ground. And that's what it means. They were on the branches attached to the ground. 3 roim, shepherds, would get up and save the Jews. Those 3 shepherds were Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, who got up and saved the Jews out of Mitzrayim, and they would flower, uporchu, they would all of a sudden flower, all the grapes would come out, and then it would be beautiful, and then he squeezed them and gave them the power. What does squeezing and giving the power mean? It means the cup he gave to Paro was a kosat har'ela, meaning a cup of punishment, which would be the makos that Paro would get for enslaving them. But the promise of the Sar Hashkin's dream is that even though there's going to be tsaros for the Jews, nonetheless, at the end of the day, the grapes will be squeezed into wine, that there will be good things that will happen. Punishment will be given to Paro, and we will be able to leave Mitzrayim, and that's the idea behind it, and that's what it's supposed to be. This is the butler's dream. The baker's dream is the exact opposite. He dreamt of 3 baskets, which would be the 3 other exiles that the Jews would have to go through Babel, Yavon, and I think Paros and Mother are included in Babel, Yavon and Edom. He saw those 3 baskets of bread, which meant the punishments that Bnei Yisrael are going to have to go through. He did not show anything good happening. All he showed was the birds eating from the bread, meaning the other nations of the world are going to destroy the Jews when they're in that gullus. When Yosef saw that and realized what was happening in the baker's dream, he said, the butler said great news for the Jews, and therefore he's rewarded, he's going to go free. The baker was given a terrible dream. A dream that I forgot what the word is, allowed the Jews to be able to understand that things were going to be bad at some point. And that was the idea behind it. And that's what ended up happening over here. The Ramban says it was a hint to Yosef HaTzadik himself becoming king of Mitzrayim, and that was the grapevine that was going to be strong, and that was going to be it. But regardless, there was a huge amount of nevuah going on in these dreams. Yosef only told them the little bits. Because you had this dream, you'll go free. Because you had this dream, you're going to die. But the real meaning of the dream was not translated. He didn't tell them what he meant. All he said was, was 3 days. You'll be out in 3 days. He didn't explain what the grapes were. He didn't explain why he was going in a cup of Paro's hand. He didn't explain anything else. And we think we get it. Oh, it makes sense. He's a butler. He's going to squeeze grapes. He's going to give it to Paro. No. The Metzger Gadol is saying the only reason why he saw it that way is because that's what he's used to. He's a butler. But there's something behind the dream. Why specifically three? Why is he the one giving it? What do the branches mean? The little bits and pieces of the dream that represent other things are what we're supposed to take out of that dream. That is the most unbelievable idea behind what the butler and the baker were, and it shows us what these things are all about. The Meshech Chochma says, nothing is for naught in this world. Yosef HaTzadik had to be together with these two officers in jail in order to learn from them the ways of the palace. What they used to do when they were in charge. They were there for 1 year, says the Medrash. 1 year they were there with Yosef. And he used to tell them secrets every single day. Here's what you do in this situation. Here's what you do in that situation. He would tell, the butler and the baker would tell them, here's what's going on every single time. And that way, when Yosef HaTzadik would be made king at the end of the day, when he would be in charge of the Mishnah Lamelech, he would know what to do. He wouldn't have to be taught anything. Now they all thought, oh, what a chokmah. How did Yosef, this little kid in jail who's not even from Egypt, how did he know what to do in the kingdom? He knew because the butler and the baker told him everything, which is why the dreams only happened 3 days before they left. If the dreams happened in the beginning of their incarceration, and Yosef would have told the baker, you're going to die, then the baker would have told Yosef nothing. He would have been upset at him. He would have said, I'm not telling you a thing. Because it happened all the way at the end, he got everything he needed from the baker, everything he needed from the butler. 3 days before they left, they had these dreams. Yosef Tzadik was able to tell them what they meant, and that's the reason I said the Meshech Chochma, it was specifically them that needed to go to jail and have these dreams, so that Yosef Tzadik would find out everything he knew in order to get them. Our last idea. There's a famous mashal. You can't give something on the butler and the baker without mentioning this mashal by Rav Meir Shapiro of Lublin. You've probably heard this before, either as a kid or a little bit older. It's a famous mashal. It's said everywhere. Likutei Pshatim's had it like 6-7 years in a row. I think they have a chazaka on this fort. But it's always said. How did he know from the dream of the baker that he's going to be hung? So Rav Meir Shapiro of Lublin, he was the start of the Daf Yomi movement. He said there was a painter who painted a tremendous picture of a man holding a basket full of fruits on his head. The picture was so lifelike, so realistic, it looked so real, that birds came down from the sky to eat the fruit that was in the basket on top of the guy's head. That's how real it looked. People were shocked by how real it looked. It literally looked like you could walk into the painting. That's how real this painting looked. So they made a contest. If anybody can find anything wrong with this painting, if anybody can find anything wrong, then they'll get however many dollars. $7. We'll get $7 if you can find something wrong with this painting. People came by and they couldn't find anything wrong. Nobody could figure out anything. A wise man went up to the painting, okay, saw the painting, and immediately said, there's something terribly wrong with the painting. There's something terribly wrong. What is it? He said, now it's true, the fruit looks unbelievable. And the street looks unbelievable. And all the things, the background, everything looks like it's 100% real. So real, in fact, that the birds came down. But if the human being was real, no bird would come down and eat the fruits off a human being's head. We all know that, right? No bird would come near a scarecrow. The fact that the birds are coming to eat the fruit means that the birds know the person does not look like a real person. So there's got to be something wrong with that person. Now, in the dream of the baker, the birds came down onto the head of the baker and ate from the bread. From that, Yosef HaTzadik understood he's no longer alive. Because the birds should be afraid of a live baker, the person that's underneath. Since the birds are eating the bread off the baker's head, sorry about rhyming, but it does sound cute, it must be that the baker is not alive anymore. That he's not real, and that's the idea behind it, and that's the idea of what it was supposed to be. And therefore, I'm sorry?
And now we move to the candlestick maker.
Okay, the candlestick maker. That is cute. But either way, but it must be that he's going to be hung, and that's why Yosef HaTzadik translated that way. So just to go over what we've done today and what we did, we went through all together, it was 9 reasons versions as to what happened over here with the butler and the baker. Six from the Medrash, one from Rashi, one from Yonas Ben Uziel, and one from the Medrash Rabbah, Simon Pei Ches, and that was one that we went with, that the Ben Ish Chai explained about the daughters, that he was together with the daughter of Paro, that was the reason why that whole, the butler and the baker were both together with them. We mentioned the greatness of a dream and how a dream works. We mentioned the word kos three or four times in the Pasuk to remind us of the four cups of Pesach. The Kliyukr explained to us why, because after you're in Tsar, you free yourself, you get wine. We said the Chsam Sofer, and we explained what the dreams were. Yonas and Ben Uziel told us what the butler's real dream was, what the baker's real dream was. We said the Meshach Chochma, why they had to be there, and then we said Ramir Shapiro with that mushroom. We stop with that, guys. Have a great Shabbos.